Dear Sangha, today is the 9th of February in 2012, and we are in the Stillwater Meditation Hall of Upper Hamlet in the winter retreat. New Hamlet is not able to come today because of the snow. In our methods of practice, there is our practice of collection of the Buddha. We have a chant called the Three Refuges. And it says that the Buddha shows us the way. And we have the second part. After we chant the first part, then we chant the second part, I have already taken refuge in the Buddha. And after we chant the second part, we go to the third part. It says that I take refuge in the Buddha in myself. And we see that it's kind of short. So they said the second time we take refuge in I have already taken refuge in the Buddha, in the Buddha. So the three parts, it's different. Each part is different. In Plum Village, it's the part where it says, I take refuge in the Buddha in myself. It means that the Buddha is not something outside of us. And the Buddha is inside of us. There are many ways in which we can invoke the Buddha's name. And in there is the method called Jiyan, which means speaking the name, calling the name by saying Namo Buddhikamoni, Namo Shakyamoni, or Namo Avalokiteshvara. Invoking the name. And if we are not skillful, then after a period of time, we are just invoking the name, but our mind is thinking about something else. And not just in Buddhism, but in other traditions, there is a practice of invoking the names. You can invoke the name of Jesus Christ, Mary, Mother Mary, or a Prophet Muhammad. That is also called invoking. Those are all in Smriti. Jiyan, it means we invoke in such a way that while we are invoking the name, then the energy of happiness and liberation is watered inside of us. And in that way does the invoking have essence. And if we say Namo Amitabha Buddha, then it's just like saying 1, 2, 3 and there's no benefit in it. And your mind thinks of something else. And in Buddhism, there is the malas. And when we invoke one name, Namo Amitabha Buddha or Namo Avalokiteshvara, then we count one bead so that one of the malas so that we don't forget. And if we're not skillful, then our hand will just do it like a machine. And our invoking will just be like a machine. And it will just be the form. And that has happened in all of the traditions. Invoking. It means calling the name. How can we call the name? So that the Buddha can manifest inside of us. It needs to be like that. And if you call the name, invoke the name like a machine, or if you hold the mala and count like a machine, then it's not worth it. There is another practice called Guangdeng. It means visualization, we are able to visualize the Buddha as a person that is liberated, very gentle, very fresh, smiling, and very compassionate. And we sit or we walk, and we can visualize a person that walking, sitting with a lot of mindfulness, speaking and acting with a lot of mindfulness and full of compassion. And that is called Guangdong, called visualizing. Those are the two methods, two practices that we usually speak about, invoking, calling the name. And second is visualizing. In Buddhism, we learn that the Buddha and a person, they are related to and connected to each other. If there's not the Buddha, then there's not a human. And if there's no humans, then there's no Buddha. And that's the non-dualistic view. In the Diamond Sutra, we learn that we need to remove the idea of living beings. It is the view that living beings is the opposite, different from the Buddha. We usually compare with living beings and Buddha. If it's Buddha, then that's not living beings. And if it's living beings, then it's not Buddha. Living beings, Jumsan is living beings. It's sometimes called Houten, being, the existence. And this is what it's called in Pali. And in Sino-Vietnamese, it's called Tak Doa. Buddha is a living being, is a being, a sattva, but that has been liberated, that has reached enlightenment, and is called a bodhisattva. Bodhisattva is called Bồ Tát in Vietnamese. Bồ Tát, the word that we use, it's short for Bồ Đề Tát Đọa, it's for short for bodhisattva. So it's bodhisattva. It's called Yak Houten, a person that has reached enlightenment. Yak Houten, Yak is Bodhi, a being that has reached enlightenment. And Sattva is being. And that's how it becomes Bodhisattva. And when a person, a being that has been enlightened, they become a being that has a lot of value. They become a great being. Because in the Bodhisattva, there is the greatness of the enlightenment, and that's why they're called a great being. And so we have the word Mahasattva. Maha is great, and Sattva is being. And Bodhak Mahatak, it means Bodhisattva Mahasattva. And when a being, a person that has liberation, enlightenment, they become a great being, and they're called a Mahasattva. And that person can also be called Bodhisattva Mahasattva. And that's the meaning of these words. But if there is not a person, a being, then how can there be a great being, an enlightened person? It comes from a being. So between the being, living beings, and liberation, enlightenment, there is a connection. There's a relationship. It means that the Buddha cannot be present outside of living beings, and living beings cannot be outside of the Buddha. It's like the left and the right side. If you don't have the left, then you can't have the right. If you can't have the right, then you can't have the left. If there's no beings, then there can't be the Buddha. If there's no Buddha, then there can't be living beings. That is called interbeing. Tương đại. That's called interconnectedness. And so, in Buddhism, in living beings, there is the Buddha nature. It has the seed of the Buddha. It has the Buddha nature. If you're not a living being, then we don't need to mention, but if you are a living being, then you have Buddha nature, the capacity to be awakened, to be enlightened, to have mindfulness, concentration, and insight, and all of living beings have these three seeds, has the capacity to be enlightened, awakened. And in Buddhism, it's like that. And in other traditions, we don't know how it is between God and beings, living beings, the relationship, if it's the same. Because in some mystic beliefs, they believe that the Buddha, the God, is inside of us. But not everyone says that. And in Buddhism, it's very clear that if you want to find the Buddha, then you need to find it in living beings. Because in living beings, there is the Buddha. And outside of living beings, there is not the Buddha. And in Christianity, I don't know if they say the same thing, that if you want to look for God, you need to look for it in living beings. And in living beings, there is God. I don't know if they say the same thing. And in Buddhism, the Buddha and living beings inter-are. It's like the sun and us, although we are two, but we are one. Because we have the sun inside of us. Everything that we eat, it comes from the sun. And because of that, the sun is not outside of us, but the sun is inside of us. And because of that, invoking the Buddha's name, it's not just a normal practice, but it's actually a very deep practice. Recollecting the Buddha. And each time we touch the earth, then we read the gatha. The one who bows and the one who bows who is being bowed to are both by nature empty. That means in the Buddha there is us, and in us there is the Buddha. And so before you bow down, you touch the earth, then we need to reflect and say, Dear Buddha, I know that you are not outside of me. I know that you are in me, and I am in you. You need to be able to recite that, and you need to be able to see that. So when you touch the earth, you can be in touch with the Buddha nature inside of you. And if you think that the Buddha is something different, and we are something entirely different, you will not be able to have that connection. And so in that way, the insight of non-duality, that the Buddha is inside of us and we are inside the Buddha, then whenever you touch the earth or you invoke the Buddha's name, then it has essence. And if you see that the Buddha is not us, we are weak, we are ugly, and we are nothing, and the Buddha is everything, then that's like saying night, day and night, and they can't go with each other, and there is a discrimination. There is a duality between us and the Buddha. That's why in the Dharma Sutra it says that we need to take out the idea of living beings. Living beings is the opposite of the Buddha. We need to take that out, that view out of us. And that is the first method for that invoking the Buddha's name to be successful. We call the name of the Buddha, we reflect on the Buddha, visualize the Buddha, or we touch the earth. We need to have that insight. We need to have that view that between the Buddha and living beings, there is a connection that is very close. Outside of the Buddha, there is not the Buddha. And outside of the Buddha, there is not living beings. There is living beings. We have to see that we have the seed of enlightenment, and that is already Buddha. And so when we invoke the Buddha's names, or when we touch the earth to the Buddha, when we practice, it means that we practice in such a way for that seed to manifest inside of us, so that seed can be watered, and in that way can we be successful. It's not that we call a God in order to save us, or a great being in order to save us. That is not correct. For example, when we read the book Old Path, White Clouds, we have to read it for a few days in order to be able to finish the book. And when you read Old Path, White Clouds, looking at the form, it's not invoking the Buddha's names, but actually we are watering the seeds of insight, of love, of happiness. And in that way, while you're reading Old Path, White Clouds, you are actually invoking the Buddha's name, calling the Buddha's names, because while you are reading that book, you can see that the Buddha is inside of us, the seeds of mindfulness, concentration, and insight. The Buddha manifests inside of us very clearly. So reading Old Path, White Clouds is already a form of calling the Buddha's name, invoking the Buddha's names that we are not aware of. Like when you're listening to a Dharma talk, although we're not saying Namo Amitabha Buddha, Namo Shakyamuni Buddha, but while we're listening to a Dharma talk, the seeds of mindfulness, concentration, insight is being watered inside of us. So that is invoking the Buddha's name. That is calling the Buddha's names. And we need to be able to see it in that light. And if we practice well, then the Buddha will be present with us throughout the whole day, and is never not there. It's not something, it's an energy that is inside of us. Buddha is not a god that is outside of us. You can try this practice. They see that it's a very easy practice, and it's very wonderful. When we brush our teeth, we can say the Buddha is brushing my teeth. We let the Buddha brush our teeth. And we know that if the Buddha brushes our teeth, then he does it very in with a lot of ease and freedom. And it's not rushed, and we should brush our teeth in such a way so that the Buddha has an opportunity to use our hand, to use our toothbrush, so that the Buddha can brush our teeth. And each time we brush our teeth, we should not brush our teeth like a sattva of a being. We should brush our teeth like a bodhisattva. It means to brush our teeth with mindfulness. When you brush your teeth in mindfulness, and you know that you are brushing your teeth, and in that time you have freedom, you're not rushing, then that is the Buddha brushing the teeth. And at that time you are invoking, you are calling the Buddha's name. There are two ways of brushing your teeth. Or we can let living beings brush our teeth, or the Buddha brush our teeth. Because living beings and the Buddha is inside of us, we can just choose. And if we allow for the Buddha or the Bodhisattva to brush, then we just have more happiness. And it's very clear in that way. Drinking tea is the same. When you hold the cup of tea, we invite the Buddha to drink for us, because when the Buddha drinks tea, he does it very wonderfully. He does it with ease, and he does it in freedom, and he has happiness whenever he drinks. And that is invoking, calling the Buddha's name. It means Buddha manifests with mindfulness, concentration, insight while you are drinking tea. And like Tai was walking from Tai's hut, still hut, to out to the meditation hall, they allowed for the Buddha to walk. The Buddha is walking in snow. In India, there's not snow. So now the Buddha has the opportunity to walk in snow, and the Bodhisattva is walking, not the being, not Sattva. But we allow for the Buddha to walk. And in us, there is Sattva and Bodhisattva. One, we either allow for the Bodhisattva to walk or the Sattva to walk. And if we walk like a Bodhisattva, then there's happiness. Why do we just allow for the living being to walk? We should allow the Buddha to walk for us. And in that way, we have more ease. When we are cooking for the Sangha, we don't want to be rushed. We need to have it, do it in joy and happiness. And in that way, the Bodhisattva is being present, is cooking, not the Sattva, not the living being. And so calling, invoking the Buddha's name can happen in each moment of our daily life. When we are using the restroom, it's the same. Going to the bathroom or defiling, we can allow for the Buddha to do it, and we can do it in ease. Why do we need to rush? We can choose. Do you want to allow the living being to do, or do you want the Buddha to do it? And when the Buddha does it, then for sure it's so much easier. It's so gentle, it's at ease. And so in our daily life, while we are in Plum Village, we should invite the Bodhisattva to do everything. We should not allow for the Sattva to do it, because Sattva and Bodhisattva is present inside of us. It's the same lungs. It's the same nose. But when the Buddha breathes, then you're very happy. But when the living being, the being does it, then not as happy, because you're not aware of your breath. You're not in contact with your breath. And in Buddhism, it's like that. Buddha and the living beings is not two separate entities, but it's the same. And we should live as a person that is awakened, or do you want to live with the person that in forgetfulness? And we need to choose between the two. And happiness can be present right away, and we don't need to find it somewhere else. We just need to brush our teeth, just drink tea, just walking steps in the snow or on the grass, cooking breakfast for the Sangha, and you can have happiness. And the method, the practice is like that. And it's not difficult at all. The issue is, do you want to do it or not? And we don't look at the Buddha as a god. And or we call it's the Buddha's name to help and save us. But the Buddha is present in the form of energy, of mindfulness, concentration, and insight. And when we know how to use those three energies in order to brush our teeth, to eat breakfast, to go to the bathroom, then suddenly we have happiness. And that is our practice here in Plum Village. We should not waste our time. Do not try to find enlightenment, awakening at somewhere else at a different time. You should try it. You should try invoking, calling the Buddha's name in this way so that the Buddha can be present in each moment of our daily life. So that the Buddha can allow for the Buddha to breathe, walk, sit, brush our teeth. And it's something that we can do because all of us has the capacity to be mindful. We can brush our teeth in mindfulness. We can go to the bathroom in mindfulness. And in each moment, it brings freedom. We're not rushed. And in each moment, it brings happiness, joy. And each moment that we are present, it's a miraculous moment. The sunset is also beautiful. The rain is beautiful. The snow is falling. And everything is a miracle. And we should truly be present in order to live each moment. And if we're able to do it for one day, then there will be a big difference, a clear difference. So now we will study the sutra. During the time of the Digana Master,
there's a theory on atom theory, and he said that atom is the nature of the universe, the substance of. Atom is the ultimate reality. In science, there are people who think like that as well. They want to split things into a very tiny particle things, and then we will find something, and we call it the atomic elementary particle. And with this elementary particle is and we call that the faith, the thoughts. The substance realism. Substantialism. It means the world has a substance. And that substance is the elementary particle. And this elementary particle develop a world, and this world has a reality that exists outside of our consciousness. Our consciousness has a subject, and outside of the consciousness, there is a world. There is a reality, and this elementary particle exists outside of this consciousness. And this consciousness is outside of the elementary particle level. That is called substantialism. Substance is svabhava. The tan is the self-nature that exists by itself alone, by themselves. And the theory, which is called substantialism, has a characteristic of realism. This means the world outside is real. It's something real, something. So the method of Digana is very nice. He does not deny that. But for example, if I accept that the subatomic is the elementary particle that you say, granted that they exist truly. But the things that I see in my consciousness, I don't see those elementary particle, an atom. I don't see it, but I don't see them, but I believe. Even though I accept with you that those basic particles, they are real, but I have never seen them. I have never seen the atom. I have never seen the electron. And that is the first gatha. And the first gatha say that the objects of my perception is not the basic particle, the elementary particle, atoms, because I don't see them. I don't see the atom, I don't see I only see the bell, the mountains, the cloud, the snow, but I've never seen the particles or the basic particle. They can only be the object of my perception. They are only a condition. That condition can be like an I. Thanks to the I, there is the I consciousness. Thanks to the ear, that gives rise to the ear consciousness. There is a hearing, there is a seeing. But the particle, the basic particle, is not the object of perception. And that is a condition, like an eye or an ear. They cannot be called the object of perception. Atom.
Perception, but they are not the object of my perception because I don't see them.
That is the first sentence. So this Shastra commentary, they talk about the epistemology. So at that time, the people, the thought thinker, they don't see the particle, but when the particle or the atom come together, then you see it. We see it. But when they come together, combine together, we see something else, not a particle, not an atom. I can only see the bell, the stars, the snow, the rain, but I don't see any particle, basic particles, atoms. It's like a point, a dot, and the dot can create a rectangle, or a triangle, or a circle, or a square. I can only see the triangle, the circle, the square. But if you remove all the dot, then the circle, the square, the triangle cannot be there. They are all construction of the mind. It's very clear like that. So this images is a construction of our mind. They are like the double moon. The double moon does not exist. When it's like when we look at the rope and we think that it's a snake, but actually that it's not a snake. When you see the rainbow, it's not a rainbow. It's just a construction of our mind, mental construction. That is, and the gatha, the second gatha, to say that means that the combination of the basic of the atoms or particles, then I can accept that. I can agree that the images of the thing that I see, and they are the object of my consciousness, but they are not atoms. They are just, it is only a double moon. When I cross my eyes, I can see the double moon. That is the second sentence. Now, the atomic study people, they say that each atom, each agglomeration atoms has contained the four elements, earth, water, fire, and wind. Therefore, when they manifest as things that we see, then at the same time, they are the object of our perception. But, and then Digana Master said, they are not true. That is not even that they are not true. Because elements of fire, earth, water, wind, force. Now we call it interaction forces. They exist. We say that they exist in the atoms. I don't see them. Therefore, so they are not, it is not the object of perception. Then, the fourth gatha. Then the atomic thinker, they say that when the atoms come together, they produce a different various forms, and depend on those whether those particle atoms are more or less, then they have a different various different forms. It's like a vase is bigger than the bowl, but then the neck of the vase, and then the body of the vase, and then the foot of the vase. So the universal. So the universal is made by the particular. And Master Digana said that is not right either. Because when we see they are different, but the atoms are not different. So the basic particle, they are all the same. But we cannot see them. So what we see, we see that they are different. It's just the contraction of our mind.
So all these forms that are different, you cannot see in atoms. This is only a matter of construction. If you take atoms one by one out of it, these differences in forms do not exist anymore. Therefore, everything you see, everything you hear is just a mental construction, not reality.
The extreme small particle. So the atoms, those atoms, they are identical. That is mean they are the same. They are round, they are extremely small. They look like the same. There's nothing different between them. If you see they are different, it's only come from the mental construction. I don't have. If you remove them from by one by one, then the things are no longer exist there. It's only they have no substance. The atoms, they are small and they are identical. The small
atoms, they are small, very small, and they look like each other.
The appearance, they have a false appearance. It means the thing that we see in our perception, they are small, big, high, tall or short, beautiful or less beautiful. They are not particle. They are not atoms. So the appearance, the images, they are small, big, tall, or short. They are just only a mental construction. It's only, they are false. It's like the rainbow, like a double moon, like a snake. Like when you see a rope and you think that it's a snake. if you remove them into atoms. If we remove the vase into atoms, then the object of your perception no longer exists, no longer there. Now we move to number 6, Gatha number 6. The objects of manifested inside consciousness appear like they exist outside consciousness. They are only the objects of consciousness. We can only say that these images exist only in the consciousness and have the function of producing consciousness. Nui sắc means the inside form and outside form. They can become the objects of consciousness. So the image that has that manifested inside of consciousness, we think that they come from outside, but actually they are only they are the objects of our perception.
It serves as the object of our perception.
Object of perception is different. We should be able to identify the difference of condition and object of conditions. Yin is mean condition. Sha yin mean objects of cognition. Of cognition. So that is the object of cognition. So the thing that appear in our consciousness, they serve as an object of cognition. Its appearance in the consciousness help give rise to give rise and arise in a consciousness. The object, the appearance, the images that in the consciousness help give rise to the consciousness.
That appear in your mind, your cognition, help
we have learned that when we talk about a perception, it is always in the perception there is a part that is called kiến, is the subject and object. So that part is the kiến, is called subject and object. And this two part, they coexist. They have to lean on each other to manifest. It looks like this piece of paper. There are two sides, left side and right side. And the left side is there for the right side to be there. And the right side is there for the left side to be there. If there is no left, there is no right. If we remove one, it is impossible to remove one away. For instance, if you divide, for me, if Pháp Dương take the right and the left, and I take the right, and then I throw the left away, Pháp Dương throw the right away, then it cannot be possible. So the left and the right always manifest together. If Thầy Pháp Dung take the right away, the left away, and go to the monk resident, and if I take the right to the meditation hall, I sit peacefully, it is impossible. So the subject of perception and object of perception, they cannot leave each other. So the subject and object, they are the both in the same intent, same nature. And in the school of philosophy, phenomenology, and the people who represent like Prisel, they say it like that. Consciousness is always a consciousness of something. You cannot be conscious without an object of consciousness, cognition. Cognition. When you feel sad, what you have to be sad of something, or when you see something. If there is only worries and there is no object of worry, and you see there is no object of seeing, then it is impossible.
Is there because this is there. They coexist.
And in the sutra, it says very clearly, this is because that is. And this is a statement, a very deep, profound statement. This is because that is. Therefore, in the epistemology, we see that subject and object, they can manifest, they co-manifest. Don't think that the object, that object perception is existing outside. We can see that it is the inside appearance, and we think that they are existing outside. That is not correct. When you listen to, and you hear it, and you think that Master Digana is belong to the idealism, it say that there is nothing outside, there is nothing, there is only inside. But Digana is, it does not belong to both. He say that he accept there is Adam that exists outside, but then slowly. He guide them to come to an insight that they neither inside or outside.